The main character is a graduate assistant coach at a unnamed SEC football school. His life's ambition is to be a college coach. So, he knows football. He played it and knows how to coach it. But this book is going to be his introduction to the life of the coach off the field. The school has this thing called the Pigskin Cavalcade, where they go to the small towns around the state and kind of rally the troops, rally the boosters, raise money. And the head coach, who's a very serious sort of guy, has asked him to come along and chaperone the maverick defensive line coach, who is a bit of a rounder. During the course of his journey, he will meet the Deep Pockets Big Cigar Booster. He will meet the message board fanatic fans. He will meet some interesting coaches' wives. He will join a book club to try to impress a girl. So it's pretty silly, but it's less of, there's no actual football being played in the book. It's been billed as a football comedy, but it's really kind of a romantic comedy around football. And it's really a satire of the culture of Southern football. We take it pretty seriously down here, and I'm having some fun with that.
Well, as you mentioned, the star of the book is this graduate assistant named Ray Love. He works on the football team for, as you said, an unnamed SEC school. But I was wondering, what school or schools served as the inspiration for this? Did you take any particular model from a football program in existence and sort of use that as your backdrop?
That sounds like a loaded question, Brandon. I grew up in Knoxville, and my uncle is John Majors, who coached at Tennessee. So I've been around. My grandfather was a coach at Swanee for a number of years, and actually had four uncles play at Tennessee. My dad played at Florida State. My other uncle played at Swanee for my grandfather. So I've been around college football my whole life, and so I've met sports writers, and I've met boosters, and I've met the fans. Most of the fans are normal, but you do meet the kind of overexcited ones. I intentionally didn't name the SEC school because I think every school has that one big booster who can kind of make the calls. And every SEC school, every big-time college program has a sports writer who, kind of likes writing about the negative things more than the positive things. And they all have their excitable fans. So I thought it's kind of a universal phenomenon, so I wanted it to have that universal feel. So I intentionally didn't name the school.
You do have an extensive personal background in the sport, but your first book came out about a dozen years ago. Why did it take you so long to sort of go to the personal well and write about this subject that you have an intimate familiarity with?
Well, my dad was a lobbyist, and so I spent a lot of time around politicians as well. He spent nearly 40 years up on the Hill in Nashville. And so my second and third books were political novels. And so I have been, kind of delving into things I've been around my whole life. I just now got around to football. I had an interesting childhood, I got to go on the sidelines for football games, and every year when the legislature started up, my dad would take my brother and me up to Nashville for a day or two, and I got to hang out at the Senate and hang out when dad took legislators to lunch and dinner. It was an interesting childhood.
Well, I want to get back to something we were talking about a moment ago. You said the book does cross some genre lines. It may be hard to categorize into just one field of literature. It is a comedy, but it has hints of romance. It offers a sort of wink and nod tribute to college football, sort of a loving, joking sort of way, but it's also a satire. One reviewer even went so far as to call it guy lit as opposed to chick lit. But I wondered, how would you describe it, and how do you describe it to people that want to categorize it?
All my books are kind of hard to categorize. I don't know that any of them fit too easily into a niche. I don't think it's guy lit. It's funny, since the books come out, I've my best reviews have been from women. I've gotten all kinds of nice emails from people I know and don't know, from women who, it's funny, it's light, it's definitely a book that guys would like it. I think there's not enough fiction out there for guys. I do think this is a book that a guy who reads Sports Illustrated or reads a biography of Vince Lombardi would like. I don't know, even I can't describe it, but it's funny. That's the main thing. I was really just trying to be funny, and I think funny transcends a lot of other things.
When it comes to sports fiction, and you touched on this a second ago, writers have long adored and enshrined, say, baseball, but not so much with football. There's not so much of that out there on the market. Why do you think that is?
I wondered that, you know, when the book came out, we were trying to find ways to describe it. And I was like, is there another college football comedy out there? You know, there's Semi Tough and North Dallas 40, which are pro football comedies and satires. And I couldn't think of another college football one. America's relationship with baseball has always been sort of romantic and nostalgic. And I think, I don't know, it's the pace of the game. It kind of lends itself to that more, to prose. Football's hard to write about, too. You know, you got 22 guys on a field, and it's and just describing the game is tougher. And I think it's not as – there's less innocence involved in football just because, you know, I guess it does have that violent component. But, you know, it's funny. This is the first book where I really – you know, concentrate on football, but all my books have a football scene in it, our football reference. The Millionaires, the book before this, has a long scene at a game. And it's one of my favorite bits of writing. You see one of the main characters going into the ball game. And I love going to a ball game in October in Knoxville or anywhere. And I think it captures that feel. So I do have some romantic and sentimental attachments to football that a lot of other folks have to baseball. So that's a question I don't know how to answer either. There is a dearth of football novels out there.
College football, of course, has its critics, people who say it's the tail that wags the academic dog, people who say it's gaudy, it's barbaric, it's about the money, and so on. And in a previous interview, you seemed to agree with some of those criticisms. I wonder if you'd sort of elaborate on that, what your problems might be with the SEC as it's currently structured.
Well, not just SEC. I mean, I love watching football, and football's been good to my family. My dad and his brothers were not well-to-do, and they went to college on a football scholarship. They might not have been able to go to college otherwise. So I don't have a problem with the scholarships. I don't have a problem with football in general. I do have a problem with the fact that, you know, there's just too much money involved, and I don't like the idea that a booster can come in and say, I'm going to give $5 million, and it gives me a say over who's the coach, and I think that's too much sway. I think there needs to be. I think the university and the university presidents need to kind of take control of their schools. You know, it is a school first. I'm a college professor who does like football, but it's got to be school first. And when coaches are making $5 million and you know there's these huge TV contracts, there's 24-hour internet and 24-hour cable coverage of it. It's just gotten too big and too crazy. So I do think it's unsustainable. I think they're not going to keep being able to make this much money and not pay athletes. I think that it's semi-pro. It's a minor league for the NFL, first and foremost. And that's uncomfortable for me to think about, and I don't have a good idea of how to fix it. But it needs to be fixed, in my opinion.
You also skewer the universe of sports blogs, chat rooms, message boards. And I can tell you, as someone who has perused those sites, I can say you pretty much nailed some of the sheer inanity that goes on there. You have the obsessed fans, the know-it-alls who think they can run the team better than anybody else, and then, of course, the just plain crazy making trouble for everybody. How did you do the research for that, and what is your take on those websites?
I do find them pretty funny, you know. So it's really fun to go on one of these teams when they've had a heartbreaking loss or the season. It's no fun. Like reading about Florida or Alabama, their message boards wouldn't be any fun right now. But, you know, Auburn's would be really fun to read right now because these grown men, and I think they're primarily men, and, you know, they never use their real names. So they have these avatars. And so they can just say anything they want. They can libel someone, you know, with no pushback against it, say whatever they want to. And the poses they put up where they are, you know, they're tough and they're, you know, they always talk about when they played football and how the guys aren't as tough as if they are tough. You know, they may have played football, but I doubt they played college football. And so, and they just know more than the coaches, and they're tougher than the players. And they're getting together with like-minded fans, like-minded experts, and they're kind of whining to each other, and they're commiserating with each other. And I just thought that was really funny that, it, you know, it kind of reminded me of, you know, high school girls getting together at the mall and the juxtaposition between how they view themselves and the fact that they go to this thing and chat with each other and and find solace with each other. I found that really funny.
You were talking a little earlier about some of the reviews. You said some of the best reviews you've gotten have been from females and book reviewers, people whose jobs it is basically to review works of literature. But have you heard from anybody who is deep into the world of college football anywhere in the country what their take on the book might be?
No, that has been shocking to me because, you know, there's fewer and fewer book reviewers out there now. You know, I'm not sure there's a paper in the state of Tennessee now that has a book editor anymore. So it's tougher and tougher to get reviews. So I thought, well, you know, it's gotten so tough to get reviews. I noticed that with all my books. You know, only one of my four have been reviewed in the New York Times. There's just so many books and so little space. So I said, well, at least I'll get, you know, finally I'll have another avenue to get the word out via the sports media. I've got blurbs from Brent Musburger, you know, who's the ABC football guy, and I got John Gruden, who's the Monday Night Football announcer. And so I've got some good quotes on my book from sports people. I have not gotten a single mention from any sports writer, local, national, or otherwise. So that's I don't know if they just don't have time to read, don't want to read. You know, maybe the book hits too close to home. They write about college football seriously, and I'm sort of, you know, I'm definitely pretty tongue-in-cheek. There's one sports writer in the book, and he doesn't come off very well. So I don't have an answer for why it hasn't gotten any attention at all in the sports world, but it hasn't.
As I was reading some reviews of this book, just kind of trying to find out what the zeitgeist was from book reviewers, one of the most common comparisons that I got for this book and your work in general was to Roy Blunt, another great Southern writer. And what it made me think of is that there is this distinct genre of American literature, the Southern writer, people who are from here, who know the territory, who know the people and the geography and can write about it sort of effortlessly and capture it. And I'm wondering if there might be a market, do you think, to combine those two elements, the Southern fiction with the lack of guy fiction, as we were talking about earlier. What do you think are the prospects for an author who might want to go in that direction?
It sounds like career suicide, you know. I mean,
interesting.
Well, guys don't read fiction, you know. Now, you know, it's the chicken and egg question. Do guys not read fiction because New York doesn't put out books they like, or does New York not put out books for men because guys don't read fiction? I don't know. Secondly, you know, I think most Southern writers sort of chafe at the idea of being categorized as a Southern writer because, you know, if I was living in Oregon, I was like, oh, here's a book by a Southern novelist. I would think, why do I want to read it? That would not induce me to read the book. So I consider myself a writer that anyone in the nation would like, and my books just happen to be set in the South. But, you know, the Southerners in my book, I think, are the ones that your listeners will recognize. You know, they're not living in trailers and getting drunk and walking around barefoot. And my characters are the folks I grew up with, and I don't see a lot of that out there. And I'm not sure the rest of the nation is that interested in reading the South that your listeners and I know and live in every day. You know, the stereotypes are out there, but you and I are also here too. And so I don't think there's enough representation of us out there. So I just try to write what I know, and it has to be set in the South, but I don't ever set out to write a Southern novel or to write a novel that's saying something about the South. I'm trying to write something that is saying something universal.
The book opens with a pretty arresting scene in which the protagonist, Ray Love, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's no way I would read that out loud.
He is summoned to Coach Driver's office, only to find the coach stark naked. He's toweling himself off, listening to Bon Jovi, and of course he wants to talk about on-field strategy. So you have these two men having what is a very normal football conversation in what might be a very surreal set of circumstances. And what struck me about that was that you described the scene in, let us say, great visual detail, but it didn't venture out into gross-out kind of territory like you might see in a teen comedy film or something like that. How do you write a scene like that, keeping it light, without verging into that sort of gross-out territory?
Yeah, I'm not a gross-out guy. You know, I think I like that. That is the least subtle scene in my book. The book is sly. Satirizing college football is like shooting fish in a barrel. So that was a challenge, not to pick up all the low hanging fruit. I wanted to work at it and make it sly and make it subtle. I really like British humor. I'm a big fan of P.G. Woodhouse, and I love Lucky Jim by Kingsley Amis. And what they're really good at that, where you have this kind of low situation, this kind of not something grand or sophisticated, but they describe it in tonally. It's the language is refined. In that scene, the language is pretty elevated, and the tone is deadpan as this coach is tallying off and discussing plays, much to the discomfort of my young graduate assistant. So the juxtaposition between language and situation helped me manage to pull that off without making it coarse. It's what Monty Python does. You know, Monty Python is super silly, but they sound smart as they're being silly. And so that juxtaposition between language and situation is challenging and it's fun to write.
The inevitable consequence of some books like this is that they may be turned into a TV miniseries, or they might be, optioned to be turned into a film. Is this the kind of book that you would entertain at least hearing from people in Hollywood that might want to make a film of the book, or would you rather it stay in the print?
Yeah, Brandon, if you know somebody in the movie business, hook a brother up. I'd appreciate that. All my books are for sale to the highest bidder, Brandon. If you know any movie people, hook me up, man. No, I think every writer, number one, the money would be good. Book money is one thing, but movie money is, if you actually make the movie, it's a nice hit. But once you do sell the rights, it's no longer your baby, and so they can change it quite a bit. But I think that's okay.
Inman Majors is the author. The book is called Love's Winning Plays, a novel, which is available in hardcover now. And he joined us from the studios of WMRA in Harrisonburg, Virginia, at James Madison University, where he is a professor of English. And Mr. Majors, thank you for being with us on All Things Considered.
I had a good time, Brandon. Thank you.